This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our great country and our American way of life. On today's show, as the calendar moves to April 1st, we're going to take a deep dive slash preview of the major Supreme Court argument this month, which of course pertains to Donald Trump. That is the presidential immunity showdown coming to the United States Supreme Court on April 25th. We're going to get back into that in today's deep dive. And then today, later in the show, in today's closing argument, we're going to talk some hoops. This was a tough day yesterday here in the Hammer household when it comes to the NCAA tournament. I'm going to explain to you why that is, but also why I continue to love this NCAA tournament, March Madness, so much. It's one of my favorite sporting events of the year. All that and more later in the show, but for now, it's time, as always, to go around the horn. Today is actually the deadline for Alvin Bragg and the District Attorney's Office of New York there in Manhattan. It is their deadline to respond to Donald Trump's lawyer's motion to delay the hush money payment trial again for pretrial publicity reasons. I do not anticipate this is going to fly. Judge Juan Merchan, the judge overseeing this particular prosecution, ruled relatively recently that April 15th was still good to go. Recall that it was supposed to be March 25th. The judge kicked it back to April 15th due to this large document dump that came from the federal prosecutor's office, the SDNY there in Manhattan. I don't anticipate it getting kicked back even further, but look, you never know. This continues, zooming out a little bit and focusing on the big picture, this continues to be by far the likeliest of the four criminal prosecutions to actually get to a trial and potentially actually even get a verdict prior to November. Is also the most ludicrous of all the charges, so it is very difficult, frankly, to believe that it's going to make something of a political difference. Staying in New York City, this Thursday, April 4th, that is the deadline for Donald Trump to post that reduced $175 million payment. That is the bond that was lowered from $454 million. That is the bond that he must post as a condition of getting his appeal to the full panel, the full multi-judge panel there in the New York State Supreme Court's appellate division, in order to try to appeal this monstrosity of a verdict, this monstrosity of a ruling that the trial court judge, Justice Arthur Engoron, had ruled against Donald Trump and the Trump Organization when it comes to civil fraud. Stepping back, if you recall, it was just 1 week ago, last Monday, that Donald Trump had that bond payment reduced, and we were up against this deadline. What was going to happen at 12:01 a.m.? Was Tish James going to start seizing assets? It was this whole hullabaloo. We had no idea what was going to go down there over the course of 24 to 36 hours. Very high-intensity, strenuous stuff. We unpacked it all right here on America on Trial last Monday for you. And sure enough, they, at the last minute, as I predicted, not to toot my own horn, but I did predict that, the appellate division swooped in, cut the bond payment down to $175 million, and that is now due this Thursday. So what is going to happen? Well, I predict that Trump will be able to post that thing. Coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, interesting article from the Wall Street Journal over the weekend titled, quote, "Trump stock takes Washington by storm." Subtitle, "Surprise possible $5 billion windfall for GOP candidate adds a new twist to the race for the White House." And they're talking here, of course, about the IPO for Truth Social. Specifically, it's actually referred to as Trump Media and Technology Group. The parent company is now worth about $8.5 billion based on current valuation. Donald Trump's stake in that is worth billions and billions of dollars on current valuation. He is precluded from selling shares currently due to a lockup agreement, but we're going to see how that's going to work out. He'll probably get some sort of dispensation to be able to liquidate some of his assets. I do not anticipate Donald Trump having a huge issue ultimately ponying up that $175 million. Maybe he'll end up getting a bond in the first place. Maybe it'll be straight cash. One way or the other, we're going to find out this week. That deadline is this Thursday. Going back down to Georgia, on Georgia, Donald Trump and many of his co-defendants, as expected, issued their appeal to the Georgia appellate courts there in the Georgia state judicial system, seeking to appeal Judge Scott McAfee's Solomonic baby-splitting attempt of a remedy whereby he essentially kicked Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade off the case in exchange for his former illicit lover, Fannie Willis, continuing to lead this sprawling, racketeering prosecution down there. As I said at the time, the extent to which that remedy could be immediately appealed was a quirky and arcane bit of Georgia procedural law. There are a couple of Twitter accounts that I pay close tabs to in order to try to understand this because I'm not actually barred myself as a lawyer in Georgia. But sure enough, if you recall on the show, Scott McAfee ultimately then granted this ability to appeal his own ruling in an act, you might say, of judicial humility. Although the remedy itself was anything but humble, he failed to do the straightforward and simple thing. It was somewhat of a bizarre attempt to appease all sides. And when you try to appease all sides, you end up making no one happy. But he did, to his credit, grant that right of appeal. And then Trump and his co-defendants on Friday went ahead and appealed that to the Georgia Court of Appeals. That is where that court currently stands. Now Fannie Willis' office has 10 days to respond to Donald Trump and his co-defendants' attempt to appeal this thing to the higher court. Again, zooming out for a second here, all of this has the effect of just slowing down this prosecution even more, which is good news for Donald Trump and his co-defendants there in Georgia. I would anticipate probably not going to get a ruling from the actual Georgia Court of Appeals anytime over the next few weeks. I'd be mildly surprised if it comes, really, frankly, anytime in the month of April, based on the fact that this is just going to get drawn out more and more, maybe by the end of April. But this thing is just going to get further kicked down the road. I have a very hard time seeing this case making it to trial at this point prior to the November election. Finally, from Georgia, we go down to Florida. There is a deadline in the Florida courtroom of Judge Aileen Cannon tomorrow. This is the court and the case involving classified documents and the back and forth between Donald Trump and the National Archives, all of that ultimately stretching back to the August 2022 FBI pre-dawn raid at Mar-a-Lago, the pre-dawn raid heard around the world. Tomorrow in Judge Aileen Cannon's courtroom, the parties are expected to file their proposed jury instructions pertaining to the essential elements of the offenses in the first 32 counts of Jack Smith's indictment. So breaking down the legalese there, essentially jury instructions are one of the most important parts of any criminal trial. It is how you instruct the jury when it comes to weighing the elements of a crime and ultimately whether or not you're going to be able to find the defendant guilty or not guilty. And zooming out again for a second here, as I like to do on this show, the fact that we're getting to jury instructions already prior to even the full fleshing out of the Presidential Records Act argument and other legal arguments that would have the effect of precluding this Jack Smith prosecution in the first place, the fact that we're getting to jury instructions already strikes me intuitively as getting a little ahead of ourselves, a little bit out in front of our skis, so to speak there. Not the greatest news in the world for Donald Trump. This, the optics of this, I think, definitely tend to put him and his lawyers on guard. Maybe there actually is a chance that this thing ultimately makes it to trial prior to November. But ultimately, I still think that it is likelier than not to not make it to trial prior to November, although it could. This one is a little more possible. It's a little more possible, at least, than Georgia. The silver lining for Trump in Florida is that this is a much more politically heterodox jurisdiction from where they are drawing the jury pool there. This is a redder part of Florida, or at least a purple part of Florida at a bare minimum there, and you have to like his chances of not getting a unanimous jury at a bare minimum. Well, those are your around the horn updates for today. Up next, we're going to go back to the U.S. Supreme Court. There's that huge argument later this month in the immunity case. We're going to set it all up for you. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. So all of those cases that we just discussed, all of those are important, okay? The civil fraud case against Donald Trump is a Stalinist, un-American persecution, the likes of which I have never seen before in this country. The Tish James civil fraud persecution of Donald Trump and the Trump Organization is a quintessential act of Stalinist-esque, show me the man and I will find you the crime. It reeks of the very notion of a bill of attainder, which is explicitly proscribed by our U.S. Constitution in Article 1, Section 9. A bill of attainder was the old English common law. It was the old medieval English practice of singling out political foes and enemies of the regime for a special, i.e. terrible, treatment that is proscribed by our Constitution. This Tish James persecution reeks of that. And a lot of the other stuff is very bad, too. This hush money payment case is absolutely absurd. We literally still have no idea what is the actual legal grounds that Alvin Bragg is prosecuting on. We know that that the charge is fraudulent bookkeeping, but we also know that it has to be in furtherance of something in order to get it escalated from a misdemeanor to a felony, and Alvin Bragg has to this day remained mum as to what exactly it is in furtherance of. And then there's also all sorts of other horrible things going on as well. The case in Georgia is just a demonstrable and remarkable sham. The fact that you're charging this guy for racketeering, my God. I mean, what is this, John Gotti and the five families? Okay, all of that is absurd, but partially because of the absurdity of it all, and partially because of the fact that this Georgia case has really been collapsing for a while now, ever since Trump co-defendant Michael Roman issued this motion to get this evidentiary hearing in mid-January that first exposed to the world the depths of the depravity of Nathan Wade and Fani Willis's extramarital affair and their shacking up and the corruption and the cash and the crews and all the stuff that we've been covering on the show for the past 2 months now. Because of all of that, the Biden regime, the Democrat lawfare complex more generally, Merrick Garland, Jack Smith, Joe Biden, the DNC, the whole nine yards, they are putting all of their eggs in the basket at this point in one particular case, or at least the overwhelming majority of their eggs into one particular case. And that would be Jack Smith's federal probe in Washington, D.C. This is the election interference case, the 2020 election case, however you want to describe it there. This is essentially Jack Smith's federal version of Fani Willis's prosecution in Georgia. And this is the federal probe that Donald Trump is the center of a sprawling conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election, culminating in the events of January 6, 2021, and trying to disrupt an official proceeding. You guys know all this by now. And that is the marquee case. That is indisputably, of the four criminal prosecutions against Donald Trump, some of the non-criminal prosecutions, such as this Tish James case against Donald Trump, that case in Washington, D.C., the Jack Smith probe, is 100% the marquee case right now. And where things stand, as we turn the calendar to April 1st, and happy April Fool's Day to y'all, if that is the kind of thing that you celebrate, we are now a little over 3 weeks away from the big showdown at the United States Supreme Court on April 25th, 2024. And this is the showdown when it comes to the scope of Donald Trump's presidential immunity, whether or not he is going to be immune from this particular prosecution in the first place. And the way that this went down was, if you want to step back a little bit, was Before we got started doing America on Trial with Josh Hammer in late January, the district court, the trial court judge in this case, Judge Tanya Chutkan, had denied Donald Trump's claim of immunity. Donald Trump then appealed it to a three-judge D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals panel, which involved at least one Republican nominated judge, an old school right of center judge by the name of Judge Karen Henderson, and then in a per curiam unsigned opinion that all three judges signed on to, they denied his immunity claim in fairly sweeping, over the top fashion. It was a fairly remarkable ruling. The Wall Street Journal editorial board, for example, which is on the one hand a voice of the Republican establishment, but which on the other hand always takes a very strong view of presidential powers, they were very unhappy about that particular ruling, and I don't blame them. I don't blame them because it really did not have much nuance whatsoever. And that then teed up Trump's lawyer's appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the question that we were debating on the show for a while was what they were going to do, at the United States Supreme Court. Were they going to issue a writ of cert? Were they going to just stay? I mean, how are they going to handle this? There were lots of possible off-ramps as to how they were going to handle this at the Supreme Court. And sure enough, they turned it into a writ of cert. They turned it into a formal kind of briefing and oral argument, an expedited rocket docket type of argument there. And that's coming up on April 25th. So according to SCOTUS blog, which is a helpful website for all things SCOTUS related, it is not definitive. It is not published. It's not published by the United States Supreme Court or anything like that, but it is helpful. This is how SCOTUS blog frames the issue that is going to be argued on April 25th. Quote, whether and if so, to what extent does a former president enjoy presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct alleged to involve official acts during his tenure in office? So, a lot of legalese, but the question here is essentially, is Donald Trump immune from prosecution in Jack Smith's D.C. probe because the underlying actions that he took involved official acts acting within his scope of presidential authority? The case law here tends to try to delineate between official acts that implicate constitutional functions and nakedly political acts that involve, for example, standing for re-election and don't actually involve governmental duty. So, for example, down in Georgia, in the Fonnie Willis prosecution, you've had some Trump co-defendants there, folks like Mark Meadows, for example, the former White House chief of staff, who has tried to get his case removed from state court there, from Scott McAfee's court with Fonnie Willis presiding, over to federal court there in federal court in Georgia. He has tried to do so because he claims that he was acting there in Georgia in his official capacity. That is to say, not as a Republican political official trying to get reelected for Donald Trump, but rather in his official capacity as the White House chief of staff. Those arguments have thus far failed in federal court in Georgia, but that basically is the argument. And as I've said on this show numerous times, the Supreme Court is going to have to do a better job than the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit did when it comes to the scope of presidential immunity. The D.C. Circuit was way too quick to brush this whole thing aside there. It does absolutely have the effect of impinging and potentially chilling future presidential action if that D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals precedent stands for later use. There's no directly on point precedent here at the U.S. Supreme Court, but there is the Nixon versus Fitzgerald case from 1982. And Nixon versus Fitzgerald basically said that a president cannot be chilled by the threat of future civil liability for actions in office. They basically said that you can't file civil suit against a president after his time in the office based on what happened when he was there. So Trump's lawyers basically argue that that precedent should simply be extended from civil actions to criminal actions. It's a fairly straightforward argument. As I've also said on this show, I don't expect it to necessarily gain the support of anyone in its fullest or most robust form other than Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, who are the two most conservative and very pro-Article II, pro-executive power jurists, generally speaking there. But I think the overwhelming, most likely outcome here is that you're going to get a some sort of middle ground ruling whereby the court essentially says the D.C. Circuit went way too far in denying immunity, but Trump's lawyers are trying to go too far in saying that you are always going to have immunity. So that is neither full immunity nor no immunity. They will try to concoct some sort of middle ground solution here. And the Attorney General of Ohio, Dave Yost, who filed an amicus brief in this case, and he had a Wall Street Journal op-ed about a week and a half ago or so, 2 weeks ago roughly, that got into all this. He argued that the two boundary stakes that mark the line between official acts and non-official acts would be duty. That is, how close does it get to implicating a core Article II presidential duty? And then the urgency of the action. So that's the sort of balancing test that I anticipate the Supreme Court is probably going to end up producing here in this case. And then they're going to have to, if that's true, then they will have to remand it to a lower court for fact-finding to see whether or not Donald Trump's actions here fall within or outside of protected conduct that is immune from criminal prosecution after the president leaves office. So again, zooming out as we'd like to do here, going to have the effect of kicking this can down the road. And I do not think that Jack Smith is looking particularly good here when it comes to his D.C. prosecution. But all of that is to say that we are starting to get excited here on America on Trial with Josh Hammer for that big argument at the U.S. Supreme Court. Mark your calendars, folks, April 25th, 2024. Up next in today's closing argument, let's talk some hoops. Tough day here in the Hammer household yesterday, that is for sure. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. So by this point, y'all know that I am a pretty big sports fan, and I like to talk sometimes about the world of sports here in our closing argument segment. My beloved Duke basketball team had a great upset in a gritty game Friday evening against the Houston Cougars, who were the number one seed there in the South Regional of the NCAA men's basketball tournament this year. They eked out a 54-51 win. Admittedly, Houston's best player, Jamal Shedd, went down with an ankle injury in the first half, and he unfortunately was unable to return. You never really want to win a basketball game in that sort of fashion there. Impossible to say what would have happened had he not gotten injured. Great win for Duke regardless. Unfortunately, Duke absolutely pooped the bed in the second half of yesterday's Elite Eight game matchup against NC State, their rival in the Raleigh-Durham area that is only about 25 miles or so from Duke's campus. Duke had a six-point halftime lead. They were up 27-21. Were playing fantastic defense. They were playing smothering, suffocating defense there in the first half. NC State barely cracked the 20-point mark. And then literally everything just fell apart in the second half. Duke just could not buy a bucket throughout the entire game. Their field goal percentage was barely over 32% from the floor, 25% from three-point range, you know, notwithstanding the fact that this was a fairly prolific three-point shooting team all season long. And Duke had no answer whatsoever for DJ Burns, the large gentleman, the power forward slash center for NC State, who's clocking in at least 275 to 280 pounds. And NC State, which is on a heck of a run right now, they won the ACC tournament. They defeated Duke and UNC on their way to doing so. That was their only way to even get into the NCAA tournament, was to get that automatic bid for winning the ACC tournament. And now they are into the Final Four. My goodness, with 14 losses. And this is a great stat for you sports nerds out there. This is the most losses that a Final Four team has ever had. No team has ever had this many losses that has made it to the Final Four. They're going to have a tough test next weekend against Zach Edey and Purdue. Purdue is a heavy, heavy favorite in that game, as is UConn a heavy, heavy favorite in their other Final Four matchup against Alabama. Crazy that Alabama is in a Final Four. This is a football school, but good for them. That's one heck of a run, certainly for Nate Oates and his program there in Tuscaloosa. But upsets are always possible, and that is what makes this tournament so, so special. And brutal day yesterday for me. I'm going to be mourning this loss for a little while, but fortunately for Duke, we have some great recruits coming in next year, as we always do. So all will ultimately be okay. Thanks so much for tuning in here to America on Trial with Josh Hammer. As always, leave us that 5-star review. Send us a note. Tell us how we're doing. We look forward to your feedback. As always, Josh Hammer signing off for now. We'll be right back with you tomorrow morning.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.